literature. In Czech books this week, we find out about the life and times of an English-born Renaissance poet who spent nearly all her life in Prague and in her time was more celebrated than Shakespeare. David Vaughan has been exploring the life and work of Westonia.
We've talked in past editions of Czech Books about the remarkable Elizabeth Jane Weston, known in her time as the Virgo Angla, the English maiden at the court of Rudolf II. At the turn of the 16th and 17th centuries, she was considered one of Europe's great poets. Here is an extract from a poem that Elizabeth Jane dedicated to the Flemish composer Philippe de Mont, who at the time was living out his last years in Prague. She wrote the poem in Latin, so here it is in translation.
What is left to say? Music keeps us sound, dispels sickness, confirms friendships. It leads our senses to an obedient spirit and draws that same spirit to the heavens in a resounding voice. Yet do not foolishly consider that to be harmony, which alas becomes pernicious in its allurement. But what Phoebus has blessed you with, praiseworthy Philip, is serious or comes only by the gift of the gods. It snatches our emotions from the ground and exalts them to Olympus and can call our spirits away from vice. So rejoice in these gifts and fare you well, great Philip, that you may be sung throughout the whole world.
Elizabeth Jane Weston has been all but forgotten, and this inspired me to do some more research, talking to scholars in both the Czech Republic and Britain, and visiting some of the places in both countries associated with the poet. The outcome is A Poet in Bohemia, a radio documentary to be broadcast by BBC Radio 3 on October the 16th. One of the people I met in the course of my research was Professor Susan Basnett from the University of Warwick, who is probably the world's foremost scholar on Westonia's life and work. In today's Czech Books, I talk to Susan Basnett about the poet.
I have been working with Elizabeth Weston, with Westonia, for over 20 years. I have this enormous, I suppose you'd call it, affinity with Westonia. She and I both grew up in different countries. We spoke different languages. We both write poetry. We diverge on a number of things, but I have felt myself very, very strongly drawn to working on her. And I'm at the present writing a book about her life. I first encountered Westonia in Prague in the early 1980s, thanks to very distinguished Czech professor Zdeněk Štrbený. I was taken to see the grave of an English woman, an English poet, who, a contemporary of Shakespeare, was infinitely better known than Shakespeare, was in touch with all the great intellectuals and luminaries of Europe, while Shakespeare was pretty much, I suppose, a local hack. And yet Shakespeare's reputation has risen and risen and become global, and Westonia's reputation has receded to the point where, after the middle of the 18th century, nobody read her and very, very few people had even heard of her.
This happens quite often. It's happened all through literary history, and sometimes writers are deservedly forgotten. Is that not the case with Elizabeth Weston?
She isn't deservedly forgotten, in my view, but her poetry is very much of its time. She wrote a series of praise poems to friends and distinguished people. She played around with various forms of Latin verse, and none of that became really fashionable once we had Romanticism, because what she doesn't do is write passionate personal poetry. And so once the vogue for passionate personal poetry or passionate nature poetry came in, people like Westonia, who were writing in very contained forms, albeit using those forms in highly innovative and original ways, simply weren't read anymore.
And there is also the factor that she was writing in Latin.
She was writing in Latin in an age when numerous people wrote in Latin. I mean, basically, all intellectuals would not only write in Latin, but speak in Latin. I mean, we tend to forget that Elizabeth I was entirely capable of doing extemporary speeches in Latin and prided herself on doing so, and she was also translating from the Latin right up to within weeks of her death. So actually, knowing Latin, writing in Latin, again, it's something of its time, but by the age of personal expression and romanticism and the rise of popularity of national literatures, poets were principally admired for what they could do in their own language, not for what they could do in a classical language.
And you have mentioned Shakespeare, but Elizabeth Jane Weston's world is, it's worlds away from Shakespeare's, isn't it?
Shakespeare's world was one of travelling players. It was a world very based in urban English society. Elizabeth's was a very different world in that she mixed with high-level intellectuals who crossed the boundary, and I think this is very important for her. She was not just a writer of poetry. She was also someone very into new science, astronomy, new alchemy. And we have to remember that this is an age when the line between magic and mathematics is so thin that it virtually doesn't exist. So Elizabeth was caught up in that world of what I suppose, looking back, we'd call alternative science, but in fact was the kind of science that Isaac Newton, not long afterwards, would also be practicing.
And that's also very much a reflection of Rudolfine Prague at the time, isn't it? It was such an interesting place, a melting pot for so many scientists, alchemists, astrologers, astronomers, who were all gathered and rotating around in the Rudolfine court.
Yes, it's very much a case of what Rudolf II viewed as important, his musicians, his painters, his scientists, and so on. But I think we tend to forget, when we talk about Leonardo da Vinci being Renaissance man, that having an interest in literature, music, fine art, mathematics, philosophy, alchemy, physics, you name it, was very much part of being an intellectual in the Renaissance generally.
Here are a few lines from one of several poems that Westonia wrote in honour of the Emperor Rudolf.
May Caesar's empire, which establishes rewards for the muses, flourish, and may Caesar's court long thrive. May the anger of the Turk be smashed, and the name of tyrant perish. Henceforth may your people worship you. May the land be fertile. May the contagions of pestilence flee. And may temples, theatres and schools all rise together.
Little is known about Elizabeth Jane Weston's roots. Only in the last few decades has research revealed that she was born in the Oxfordshire market town of Chipping Norton, probably in 1581. Her father appears to have been a scholar. Parish records describe him as a clerk. And her mother came from a wealthy local farming family. Elizabeth Jane was still a babe in arms when her father died, and not long afterwards her mother remarried. The man she married was the alchemist Edward Kelly, who was employed, thanks to his supposed ability to communicate with spirits, by none other than the greatest philosopher and mathematician of Elizabethan England, Dr. John Dee. A year later, in September 1583, the entire Kelly and Dee families, presumably including Elizabeth Jane and her brother John Francis, headed off from London, first to Poland and then to Prague. Elizabeth Jane found herself growing up and ultimately spending the rest of her life in Bohemia. While John Dee eventually returned to London, Edward Kelly gradually gained considerable favour at the court of the Emperor Rudolf, and was even knighted. He made sure that both John Francis and Elizabeth Jane were given the best tutors available. At the time it was rare, but not unheard of for a girl to have such a good education.
I think there are two issues, really. One is the actual history of women's education in the Middle Ages and the Renaissance is quite cloudy. A lot has come to light in the last 30 years. Before that, it was generally assumed that only boys were educated and girls were not, and we now know that's nonsense. One of the most interesting cases I can think of is Lucrezia Borgia. We all think of her as a poisoner, an adulteress, or whatever. In fact, she was really a very erudite, very learned woman who wrote a little bit of verse herself, but also cultivated around her some very, very high-level poets, and, of course, conversed in Latin. And we tend to forget all that. We tend to forget the high level of women's education at the court of Isabella and Ferdinand of Spain, which is why Mary Tudor and ultimately Elizabeth were so well educated. And Latin was the absolute cornerstone, because Latin was regarded as the supreme language, the sublime language. If you could compose good verse in Latin, this was a demonstration not just of your intellect and of your status, but also really in a sense of your innate poetic ability. And so there's a whole number of women who tried their hand at this.
Westonia's education put her in good stead when her stepfather Edward Kelly fell out of grace with the imperial court. He was imprisoned and the family's properties confiscated. After his death, under circumstances that are far from clear, Elizabeth Jane, still in her teens, fought determinedly to win back the family's fortunes. The weapon she used was poetry. She addressed hundreds of influential figures around the Emperor Rudolf, writing exquisitely crafted Latin poems, begging them for support and patronage. And remarkably, she succeeded. Her poetry was so impressive that she very soon became a celebrity in literary circles across Europe. She went on to publish 2 sizable volumes of poetry and correspondence, in the meantime getting married in 1603 to imperial lawyer Johannes Leo. Over the next 9 years, they had 7 children, only 3 of whom survived infancy.
I think what comes across from her poetry, from her letters, from what we know about her, is that she was a person clearly with a great deal of energy. She fought passionately for what she saw as her rights and her family's rights. And that sense of grievance, injustice, of someone battling to right a wrong, is very, very strongly there. She did bear grudges. You can see that in some of her poems. There's also the edition in the British Library where there's a handwritten note, which I like to think she wrote, which basically complains bitterly about what her editors have done to her. So I think she was a fairly strong-minded person. She's also obviously a very kind person.
And what of her poetry itself?
Her poetry is, I think, first of all, very learned. That's important to stress. It's not personal in the sense that we understand personal poetry today. It's very scholarly. She demonstrates in her poems what she's read. So even where she's writing about natural events, there was a terrible flood in Prague that she wrote about. She writes about gardens. She writes religious poems about, you know, the birth of Christ. She writes about events. But always there's this extraordinary learning, so that when you read her work, what you can see, or what her contemporaries would have seen, was a modern woman using classical scholarship and classical conventions in new and exciting ways.
No one who has not been touched by it can speak of the force and power of insatiable death. Indeed, I would have thought it raged through our bodies only and could not wound the spirit with its darts. But the reality teaches me far otherwise and makes me speak as one who has been wounded and is experienced.
Those were a few lines from a poem Elizabeth Jane Weston wrote on her mother's death in 1606. She herself had only another 6 years to live. She died on November the 23rd, 1612, at the age of just over 30. At the time, she was probably the best-known English writer on mainland Europe. Gradually, she is once again being remembered, even if most of us can only enjoy her work through translations.